So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Jacob Morgan, who is author of a new book called The Employee Experience Advantage. Hi, Jacob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. Very well. So, Jacob, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about the work that you do?
Sure. So, my name is Jacob Morgan. I live in Northern California, So in the beautiful Bay Area. And basically what I do is broken down into a couple of different areas. So first, I write books on the future of work and employee experience, things of that nature. I speak at around 40 conferences a year, whether they're for large organizations or just public-facing conferences. And then I do some advisory for organizations around the world and some thought leadership projects for various vendors as well. And then the last thing I do is I help create content on the future of work. So podcasts, videos, articles, etc. And really my job is to help people understand what the future of work might bring and what we need to do to prepare for that future.
Okay, cool. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning, you've recently published a new book called Employee Experience Advantage, but its full title or the subtitle is How to Win the War for Talent by Giving Employees the Workspaces They Want, the Tools They Need, and a Culture They Can Celebrate. So that's some subtitle, but it does what it says on the tin, I hope. Well, it does, because I've read the book and it does what it says on the tin. But for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit more about the book, how it came about, and who's it for, and what's its purpose? Because I know there's actually an interesting, really interesting backstory behind it.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, first, the subtitle is quite a long subtitle. Everyone always makes fun of it when they see that subtitle, and I agree, it's massively long, but it's something that the publisher kind of believed in, so I went along with it, and now it's been kind of this ongoing joke to see how many words I could fit on the cover of a book as a subtitle. But the concept behind the book is pretty interesting, because it looks at, and the reason why I wrote the book is because I've been very interested with this idea of employee engagement for a while, and for the past few decades, anybody that has either worked at an organization that has tried employee engagement initiatives, or anybody that's responsible for these initiatives themselves, will know that the investments are consistently growing, but the scores are consistently not growing.
Sure.
And so the big problem was, well, why is this happening? How is it that we're investing more money in employee engagement, yet organizations around the world are constantly not seeing growth in their employee engagement scores?
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of why I wanted to write the book, to explore that, is to see what's happening. And it led me to discover this emergence of a new area we're starting to see, which is employee experience. And the big difference between the two is employee engagement has become this idea of forcing employees to work in outdated workplace practices, but you give them perks to distract them from the sad reality of their work lives.
Right.
Employee experience, on the other hand, has been this actual change of what those workplace practices are. And it's a very different way of thinking about your organization. And the book is ultimately good for everybody. I mean, it's good for an employee that wants to understand how their workplace is changing and what role they play. It's good for a mid-level manager that wants to understand how they can help shape experiences for their people. And it's good for a senior executive that wants to know what employees care about most and how they should build and design their organizations. So I think it's got a good kind of balance for everybody that's interested in work.
Okay. But there's also an interesting kind of backstory to it, because it's actually, the book is built on a quite a sizable piece of research. So could you give us a little kind of a overview, summary of kind of the research effort that it took to compile the book, or to do the compile the research and the data that enabled the writing of the book?
So there were two organizations that were very kind enough to fund my research, and one was Lever and one was Cisco. And they were, you know, they believed in the project and basically just handed me funds to do the research and had no oversight of anything that I was doing, which was
very cool.
Great and helpful. But basically what I did is I interviewed 150 executives. I went through 150 case studies, research articles and studies, reports and whatnot. And then I hired a team of 5 researchers and 2 data scientists, and we looked at publicly available data on 252 organizations around the world to see how good they are when it comes to designing areas or designing things around culture, technology, and physical space.
Right.
And there were 17 variables that I looked at, 10 for culture, 4 for physical space, and 3 for technology. And we use these 17 variables as a way to evaluate these 252 companies.
Okay.
So I have some great data and actual numbers behind some of the things that I found, and it's been super helpful.
Excellent. Now, the thing I was going to, what I'm interested in is as well is that the, because it seems to me that there's this emerging link, and you tell me if you agree with this or not, between sort of employee experience and customer experience. I mean, would you agree with that? And what did you learn from the research about that?
Absolutely. So admittedly, I don't spend as much time on the customer side as I do on kind of the workforce side.
Sure.
But a lot of the same concepts very much apply. You know, your employees are customers of your organization, and that's how you need to treat them.
Okay.
And a lot of the same principles that we look at for customer experience, you do apply for the employee experience. You know, we spend a lot of time on the customer side understanding customer preferences and personas. We design these kind of journey maps for them. You know, we spend all this time trying to basically understand how our customers work, or I'm sorry, how they purchase, why they purchase, what their behavior is. We use data, we test things. Like, we go all out when it comes to the customer side.
Right.
Yet for some reason, we forget to do all of these things for our employees because we just assume that, you know, hey, they work there. We don't need to spend as much time and effort and resources on them.
Yeah, because we pay that money, they don't pay us money.
Like Adobe, they have somebody who's responsible for both customer and employee experience. It's the same person.
Oh, okay.
Their title is the SVP of Customer and Employee Experience.
Cool. And so... But also then, as I was going through the book, the one of the things that stood out, I mean, and it's quite stark, and it seems it's a rising sort of theme. Can you talk about this idea that purpose is becoming increasingly important? I mean, but it's a big word, and it's a word that gets bandied around a lot by, you know, a lot of different people, and it means lots of different things. But can you explain to me what you mean by purpose and why you think it's becoming increasingly important with respect to the employee experience?
Purpose was one of the 10 attributes or the 10 variables that I looked at as a subset of culture.
Right, okay.
And purpose has become kind of a nebulous thing, right?
It's sort
you know, what is purpose and who's responsible for creating it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't believe the organization creates that purpose for you. The organization can help connect what you do to the impact that you or the organization are having.
Yeah.
Which in turn will allow you to feel a sense of purpose. But, you know, no employee should rely on an organization to help, you know, make them feel like, you know, they had no purpose in life. And now because they work for this company, now they have this great sense of purpose. It's sort of naive and a bit ignorant to think that somebody else is responsible for your sense of purpose. And so I think you as an employee, you need to have kind of a lot of self-awareness to understand what you want to do, the impact that you want to have, the industry that you want to be a part of, and what gives you that sense of fulfillment and impact. But it's also up to the organization to help make sure that you feel that sense of impact. In other words, how is the work that you're doing impacting customers? How is it impacting the community? How is it impacting the world? And so that is the organization's responsibility.
Right.
Is to help make you as an employee understand how the work that you're doing is having an impact. But it's not up to the organization to say, okay, you're starting to work here. You have no sense of purpose whatsoever. We're going to build that for you and shape that for you. That's not the purpose of the organization. So it's kind of a balance, and both parties need to come together.
Okay.
Employees who have that level of self-awareness and the organizations that are good at connecting that employee's self-awareness to the work that they're doing.
Okay. And, you know, if you were to sort of to, you know, to, based on the research that you found out and, you know, and all these different, you know, it's a big piece of work. I mean, and there's a lot to it, but actually, you know, I think because it's quite a new theme. It's been around for a while, but it's a rising importance. The idea around employee experience. I mean, but also it's going to start competing in some way, I guess, with employee engagement. And whilst people are looking at that increasingly, they're also starting to question, you know, some of the ROI behind it. But so, I mean, what's the business case for investing in employee experience?
Well, thankfully, as part of the research, I was able to do quite a bit of an ROI analysis.
Yay!
And I looked at anecdotal data, I looked at list comparisons, I looked at business metrics and stock price performance.
Right.
So, anecdotally, the organizations that invest in employee experience, the executives told me that they see more productivity, happier employees, greater talent pipeline, etc.
Yeah.
On a list level, I compared... Do the top performing organizations, when it comes to employee experience, do they also appear on other lists more often?
Right.
Forbes most innovative lists, best places to work lists, etc.
Okay.
And there too, the answer was consistently yes. They appear on those lists 2 times as often, 10 times as often, up to 40 times as often, depending on the list that we look at.
Okay.
The third area that I looked at was business metrics. And I found that these organizations, on average, have 4 times higher profit per employee, on average, around 3 times higher revenue per employee. They're 24% smaller, and their turnover is 40% lower.
Right.
So very, very significant impact there. And then stock price performance, the experiential organizations, as I call them, those that are great at employee experience, they have far superior stock price performance, even when compared to the Fortune 100 best places to work, when compared against Glassdoor's best places to work, looking at the NASDAQ, the S&P 500. These experiential organizations consistently outperform everybody else. So the ROI is pretty solid.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, there's some great numbers there. I mean, and I guess it's The challenge with things like this, whether it's customer experience, whether it's employee engagement, whether it's employee experience, the challenge is that they can often be considered soft initiatives, let's say. But actually what you're saying is that through your research, you can, even it might be considered a soft initiative because you're not actually buying something necessarily, that there are some really, really hard benefits, which is fantastic. But
absolutely.
Just to bring it sort of to light in terms of, you talked about these, what you called experiential companies. Could you give me a couple of, 2 or 3 examples of companies that you believe through your, that you found through your research that you think are getting it right, and sort of what they've done and, you know, what they're doing and what sort of business benefits that they're seeing? Because I guess that's just going to take the research and go, ba-da, here's some examples of companies that are leading lights in this space.
Yeah, there were, out of the 252 companies I analyzed, there were 15 of them that were considered experiential organizations. So right. not a large number by any means.
Sure.
And some of these were the likes of Facebook, Google, Cisco, Airbnb, Microsoft, Accenture, and a couple others.
Yeah.
And so these organizations have done a tremendous job of really redesigning their workplace practices. I mean, we could look at Cisco, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Cisco has taken this traditional notion of work, and they are giving managers and executives various training around emotional intelligence and trying to teach them to connect with their employees more.
Yeah.
They're challenging the conventional notion of having one job inside of a company, and they're experimenting with this idea of allowing employees to have multiple jobs inside of the company.
Right.
They equip their employees with modern technologies. They've redesigned their spaces to be more tech savvy. The executives there are very approachable. They act more like coaches and mentors. And so they've taken a lot of these traditional and conventional ideas around people practices and have rethought them.
Right.
And they actually have hackathons at Cisco where employees get together and they break down their workplace practices and rebuild them for kind of the modern era that we live in. Cisco also does something really cool called Moments That Matter, or Moments of Impact.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is they've taken the employee, and they, instead of viewing them as a worker, they view them as an individual who has moments in their life that are impactful and meaningful. And they try to understand what those moments are, whether they are related to work or not related to work. So when you buy your first house, when you have your first child, when you get your first promotion, all of these different types of things comprise moments that matter. And Cisco's doing a great job of understanding the employee from a more human and individual perspective, and that allows them to create better experiences.
Right. So if I can go back a little bit to something you talked about, this they have these, you're saying Cisco's have these kind of hackathons around breaking down their current business practices and then rebuilding them in a more sort of effective way. I mean, can you explain give us an example of what they've, of something that they've broken down and rebuilt? Because that, I mean, that It sounds really interesting, and because I'm really interested about how they've done that and what they've focused on.
So two of the one I already mentioned, but look at annual reviews, right? That's a very simple one,
right?
And so they identified that annual reviews are clearly an outdated and broken workplace practice for Cisco,
right?
So once they made that decision, literally a couple of days later, their chief people officer made an announcement to the entire company saying, "Stop doing annual performance reviews. We're going to get rid of them."
Right.
So that's just a great example of how a company like Cisco, 80,000 employees, is able to move relatively quickly when it comes to making a decision around a workplace practice.
Uh-huh.
Another one I mentioned earlier, which is this idea of, do you only have to have one job at Cisco?
Yeah.
In other words, what if Cisco needed help with something, they could let the company know, they could tell people what they're willing to pay for it, and see which employees inside of Cisco would be willing to take on that project.
Right.
And so they're taking these conventional notions of outdated workplace practices, and they're just experimenting. I mean, they're having fun with it, they're testing ideas, and they're seeing what resonates with employees and what doesn't.
And would you say that the thing that around having multiple jobs, I mean, is that sort of aligned with this idea about self-organizing teams, where there's work to do and people have skills and then they can coalesce around projects, but it's under their, if you like, an own initiative to get involved with those things?
Partially, yes.
Okay.
Self-organizing teams implies that you have complete control of everything and you build your own team and stuff like that. That's not entirely what Cisco's doing, but okay, they are giving employees as much freedom and flexibility as they can and as much autonomy to do the work that needs to get done.
Okay.
So Cisco will oftentimes help form the vision, help point out the direction that they want to go in, and they will allow employees to help figure out how we're going to get there.
Okay.
And so that's absolutely a big part of what Cisco is doing. You know, they have a great workplace flexibility program. Employees are constantly mobile and on the go. So they do a very good job of making work fit within life, instead of forcing employees to make their life fit inside of work.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, I don't want to kind of go so really, really deep into the book, because obviously we want people to go and buy the book, obviously. But if I was to say to you that somebody is listening into this or reading the highlights and they're saying, you know what, I can see the value in designing and delivering a better employee experience, but they're like going, that seems like a really big undertaking. I mean, but so what, where would you encourage them to start? I mean, what sort of things should they be thinking about doing first?
Well, the simplest thing is also probably the least. it's something that we all know we should do, but we don't, and it's talk to your people.
Right.
The leading organizations, when it comes to employee experience, one of the things that they do better than anybody else is they know their people.
Right.
And they know their people not just through one-on-one conversations, but through the use of technology. So they're constantly getting feedback and ideas from their people, and they're designing things that people would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
So just like you're in a new relationship for the first time and you start by asking questions and getting to know that person, do the same thing inside of your company. Just start having those conversations with your people and get to know who they are.
Yeah, I guess it all starts from an understanding and building a relationship, I guess.
Absolutely.
So, Jacob, I mean, I know that your time is kind of, your time is kind of like precious, but it's like, is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd want to point out about the book that we've kind of missed before I ask you a couple of selfish questions on my behalf, or the questions that I normally ask at the end of these kind of podcasts, as it were?
No. I mean, I just encourage people to think about the experiences that they want to have at their organizations and take more responsibility and accountability for the work experience that you want to have. Speak up. And all employee experiences come down to three things: culture, technology, and physical space. So
yeah,
everything that you do, everything your company does, should be thought of in those three buckets.
Fantastic. So this brings me to my penultimate kind of question, and that is, I wrote a book last year called How to Wow, and it was primarily based on sort of customer, service and experience. But what I've been doing over the last year is on these podcasts is asking people for their perspective on what is wow service or experience to them. So I'd be really interested to get your take on that.
So around great customer experiences?
Well, you can apply it the way whichever way you want. I mean, if you want to apply it to kind of an employee experience, or that's fine. But I guess what I'm saying is that, what does wow service or wow experience mean to Jacob Morgan?
Oh my goodness. Well, to be honest, on the customer side, I'm obviously a customer of many different products and services. And for me, I'm a very simple person. For me, a wow service and a wow experience is when I get what I'm told I'm going to get. And if I'm not, it's where the organization helps solve a problem for me in an easy way. So if my expectations are met, I always say, wow, that's great. Because interestingly enough, today in the consumer and the customer world, it's actually becoming very hard to meet the expectations of customers. We want real-time feedback. We want products and services to work better. We want them to have more features. We want them to be able to do things that maybe they're not intended to do. And when they're not, we believe that those products are subpar. So for me, when my expectations of what I expect a product to do matches with what I'm told it can do, I say, wow, that's great. If it goes above and beyond, which rarely happens, then it's kind of like, the cherry on top. But that is really all I want. I just want, like, for example, I bought a new a Linksys Velop system. And it's a new mesh network system that was just announced at CES in 2017. It's supposed to be the best, this amazing stuff. And I purchased it, and the darn thing is being it's not working. And it's supposed to be the top of the line mesh network system, and I've spent countless hours with them on the phone, and they're constantly asking me to do work and reinstall and install. And that to me is an example of a very crappy service and experience. Because they're making me work, right? They're making me work to solve my own problem, which is clearly a product, a problem of theirs. And so if the product would have just worked, and if it would have given me better internet connection and allowed me to just have one network in my entire house, and work the way it said it was, would have worked, I would have said, wow, this is a great product. Like, it does everything it says it's going to do. Like, I don't need it to do anything more. I just wanted it to do what it said it was going to do. So that to me is a simple wow experience. Just do what you say you're going to do.
Fantastic. And that, Jacob, that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, and the question is this: is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Oh my goodness, shamelessly.
I can take the shame out.
Well,
You can just ask for the
I of
plug.
course. It's that word shamelessly. I would love people to check out my site and my book and podcast and videos and all the fun stuff that I'm working on. So, shameless plug is just my website, thefutureorganization.com, or just find me on Google with my name, Jacob Morgan.
Jacob, thank you for that. And I'll make sure that all gets edited up and linked up, and when it goes live, and we'll give you the book and the website a big plug. But from my perspective, I just want to say, congratulations on the book, congratulations on the kind of the research effort and the findings, and thank you for sharing some time and your experience with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.